Resilient Cyber Podcast brings you conversations from diverse cybersecurity professionals, ranging from executives, subject matter experts, and aspiring entrants. Today's diverse threat landscape requires systems that can withstand a variety of cyber incidents, remaining trustworthy and secure.
As always, we want to give a special shout out to our Season 2 sponsor, Accurics. That's A-C-C-U-R-I-C-S. Accurics is an infrastructure as code security company, which helps codify security for your cloud native infrastructure by codifying security throughout the development lifecycle. They also manage the popular open source IAC project, Terrascan. Visit them at accurics.com for more.
Thank you for joining us in the Resilient Cyber Podcast. My name is Chris Hughes, along with my co-host, Dr. Nikki Robinson.
Hey, everybody.
And today we're joined by Dr. Alan Friedman from CISA. Dr. Friedman, thank you for joining us.
I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, definitely. We're really excited to have you on, honestly. For those that don't know who you are, which I suspect in the cyber community is not many at this point, do you mind telling us a bit about your background and, you know, what you're up to at the moment?
Sure. So I, these days, start to introduce myself as the guy who doesn't shut up about SBOM. And I think that's what we're going to be talking about today. But I have a background that's sort of in, I was a mediocre engineer and a mediocre economist. But I've been sort of at the intersection of the policy side and the technical side of security for about 20 years, first on the research side, and then I joined government about 6.5 years ago to sort of basically say, how can we make progress on some of the market failures around security?
Awesome. I know you mentioned like the term SBOM, you know, which many are familiar with now. There's been a ton of talk about it from NTIA and CISA, and now in the industry community as well, you know, of course. What exactly is an SBOM and why do we need it? You know, why is it important?
So SBOM is a software bill of materials. So the imperfect analogy is a list of ingredients. You go to the store and you buy a Twinkie. It comes with a list of ingredients. Why on earth don't we expect just that minimum level of transparency from the software that our organizations are buying, our governments are buying, and that are running our critical infrastructure? So the vision is to track this data across the ecosystem as we build the software so that folks who make software know what they're building, folks who are buying software know what they're choosing software, in the case of open source, know what they're getting. And once we're operating software, when new risks are coming out, it allows organizations to figure out whether they might be affected.
Oh, that's great. No, and I love that analogy too. So one of the presentations that you gave, I was sort of reviewing this and you were talking about why, you know, software supply chain attacks, they really shouldn't be discussed anymore as emerging threats, which I have to agree. But, you know, since they've been really going on for years, but I'm curious, why do you think that we're still talking about this as like an emerging threat or something novel, you know, something sort of new to be concerned about?
You know, I think part of it is just right the nature of our cybersecurity world, which is we, you know, short attention span. There are things that are fads that have about a year, year and a half. And the sunburst attack, which targeted SolarWinds, really, I think, shook people up because folks knew about it. But in terms of a national security impact, it had a non-trivial amount. These do go back quite a ways. And also, it's a very vague set of risks, right? I think the supply chain covers quite a lot of ground. And one way to think about it is that actually it's a good sign for the state of software in that if adversaries have to go upstream to attack modern software, it means that it's a little less harder to come in, just do the full front attack against the sort of defended software assurance model. I'm sure plenty of your listeners will disagree and come up with great examples of successful flaws that have come up, but it shows that our adversaries have been a little more creative. And of course, the supply chain is quite a soft, unprotected underbelly. It includes not just the components, but it includes the tools, it includes the processes, it includes the organizations. And managing that and building out both controls and models is going to be a very long process.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're seeing more and more, you know, organizations are increasingly using, you know, external software, external vendors, partners, suppliers, et cetera. So it's a complicated ecosystem. One thing I was thinking about when it comes to SBOM, I think like conceptually, you know, as practitioners, many of us can grasp like why this level of transparency would be valuable, why this would give us insight that we lack at the moment in many cases. But from a practitioner's perspective, you know, I think many security teams, you know, to be honest, are overburdened in terms of dealing with telemetry from SAS, DAS, you know, secret scanning. you know, cloud native environments now, things of that nature. I was always wondering, you know, how do you see like SBOM being operationalized as part of like a broader security program for practitioners?
So I think I like to I steal this metaphor from a number of people. I think Josh Corman has talked about sort of Maslow's hierarchy in security. And so definitely there are priorities for practitioners. So if an organization doesn't have a reasonably solid asset management program, please focus on that, right? There's nothing I can say that is more important than just knowing what you have. SBOM and managing the supply chain really is the next phase down. And from an operational perspective, we're going to see it ultimately implemented along with all of our other tools, right? This is something that we don't imagine people managing this manually. Now, as with any new idea and new set of technologies, there is going to be a maturity curve. The analogy I like to use is threat hunting, right? Which is, right, once upon a time, that was very rare. Only elite organizations had it, right? You did your threat intel manually. And now there are, it's now sort of percolated down to the middle class of organizations can have turnkey threat intel and start to do some threat hunt without, you know, having to buy a world-class expert. And I think we're going to see the same thing with SBOM, where the data today, we're starting to be able to build it. We're integrating it into your build tools, right? If you make software, just track what you have. In the open source world, there are lots of great tools. There are more commercial tools out there. We're going to learn how to move it around. It's one of the big open areas. And then lastly, how do we integrate this into our standard operational process, right? This isn't anything more sophisticated than vulnerability management or asset management. So we can put this into vulnerability management tools or SIEMs or data lakes and then process it the way we do it to any other risk model or risk data.
Yeah, it's a great insight. I've heard, you know, many people talk about SBOM, but not necessarily how we integrate it into a broader security program. So that's something I've been wondering about. Another thing you talked about recently was a new initiative called VEX, which looks to add, you know, context to the SBOM to make it more actionable, for example. Can you touch on that and, you know, why you think it's valuable and how organizations can leverage that?
I think this is going to be one of the key parts of making SBOM specific is this idea of VEX. One of the better concerns that we hear, right? So there are people who don't want to do SBOM for a variety of reasons, right? Some of them are, you know, a little frustrating, such as, well, we just don't want to share what is in our software. And I get that, but from a security perspective, we're going to have to get over it. And by the way, you just have to share with your customer. You don't have to make it perfectly public. But one of the, for folks who really know security and know the vulnerability ecosystem, they point out that, hey, listen, there are times when I use a vulnerable component in my software, but that doesn't actually affect my downstream user for a variety of reasons, right? I'm not using that part of the code. I'm not using the affected part of the code, or I have inline controls. And in which case, the SBOM will give a misleading understanding of risk. If I only look for the presence of the vulnerability, then we're going to overstate the risk. So what VEX allows is it allows a software supplier to communicate downstream that a vulnerability does not affect them. It stands for Vulnerability Exploitability Exchange. And one way to think about it is a negative security advisory. We're all used to security advisories from companies saying, my product is affected by this vulnerability. But this allows someone to say, it is not. And we think this actually has a lot of value for a wide range of applications. We think this might even be more popular quickly because it's going to reward good product security teams for moving quickly. When new vulnerabilities are announced, product security teams can actually save money from customer support by saying, let's push out a machine-readable note that allows us to say, hey, this vulnerability doesn't affect our product. And again, this is the sort of thing that will ultimately be implemented and built into tools so that we can, you know, the SBOM will help the dashboard light up. The VEX will help us automatically turn off those lights.
I have to say, I'm a big fan of that, adding that sort of contextual data, whether not just saying, yes, we do have this vulnerability, but hey, actually we don't. So I think that's great to add a bit more information to the customer. I'm also curious from sort of, you know, talking about having an SBOM and sort of what this really means to the industry. What do you think that there are maybe like the top three things or the biggest things that organizations can sort of do today to be aware of and maybe even implement into their organizations to sort of prevent or protect against software supply chain attacks?
You know, I think the first thing one can start to do is just start asking for SBOMs. And this is, you know, I know the theme of this podcast has really emphasized not this magical security property, but resiliency. probably the most important thing we can do when we find out something bad has happened is to say, am I affected? And for me, that's kind of crazy that that's actually the hardest thing to do today, right? When either a great security researcher or the secret squirrels find out that, hey, there's this risk, that should be the hard part, right? That should be the research should be the hard part. But for large organizations, actually figuring out if they're affected and where is surprisingly expensive and surprisingly time intensive. So from a resilience perspective, that's the first part. Second part is for folks who are building software and developing software, and I think that's most of us, start to track this data, right? This is something that you're going to want to do anyway. And in fact, a lot of your tools are doing it, right? This is something that, you know, you get your GitHub flags that say, by the way, you know, these 18 components are out of date because someone just updated a comma. And so, right, we have this tool already. Find some of the great open source tools that are out there. There are two data formats that speak SBOMs, CycloneDX and SPDX. They're both great formats. They're a little different. They come from different perspectives, but both are wonderful. And start to think about them. So ask for SBOMs, start building SBOMs. And then I think the next thing is just sort of, again, have greater situational awareness of, if you have this data, what could you do with it? So this is a little bit of a long-term planning approach of thinking about what are the risks that your organization is worried about. Are you worried about simple dependency fragility, which is to say, is my product dependent on an open source project that only has one or two developers? Well, that's one concern. If your product is worried about, right, active compromise, then you're going to want to sort of tell a different story of saying, well, maybe I should set up some sort of more active surveillance. And there are increasing number of products in the market that are tracking this and that can help you manage that open source risk. But I think it's just entering supply chain risks into your threat model. And, you know, it's of course much bigger than just SBOM. The bigger picture is going to be, how do I not just track my components, but track my tools and my process to make sure that someone isn't actively interfering in the build process itself. And we have some emerging tools, especially in the cloud native space, but those are things that I think today they're beyond experimental, but they do require some handholding. So it's going to be an organization that accesses the resources that is going to learn how to use those.
I think those are excellent points. And I just wanted to sort of sneak in another question here, because you speak so passionately about SBOM and this topic. And I'm curious sort of what got you excited and interested in this specifically.
It's a fun story. And there's sort of the scientific model or the cybersecurity model. And then there's also the government answer to that. So one, from the topic of SBOM is not new. It was first proposed, came out of the configuration management research world back in the 90s. So there have been some advocates like Jeff Williams and Josh Corman that have been pushing it. And indeed, it was even proposed in congressional legislation in the U.S. in 2014 that said everything the DoD buys is going to have an SBOM. This was not popular. In fact, it actually created some antibodies in the Washington, D.C. space that sort of set back the cause for a little while. So that relates to sort of the art of the possible. And one of the things, so I'm now at CISA. I began my government career at NTIA for 6 years and genuinely loved it. NTIA is a small part of the U.S. Department of Commerce. It stands for the National Telecommunication Information Administration. And as a small government agency, it can be very agile. And so we really could, my mission was to understand what were the security issues where the government doesn't care what the solution is. We just need a solution to exist. And there was no one working on this particular issue. And so we were able to pick it up. NTIA had a reputation as being a convener, a successful convener, where we could pull together a diverse community and help the community find common ground. And so that's how this effort started, really saying, you know, the government was the catalyst, but the work that's been done has been done by the community. There are public working groups that anyone's been able to join. And that tradition is going to continue as the NTIA work is just now wrapping up. And I'll put in a plug, ntia.gov/SBOM. That work is wrapping up, a three-year effort, which really took it from, you know, zero to a sustainable level. And now that work's going to continue at CISA. And so stay tuned for an announcement. We are going to have a community meeting and maybe I'm jumping ahead to a future question, but we're going to be having a community meeting in early December where we really want folks who are interested in this to say, here's what you don't have. Here's the pieces that you want. And we're tentatively calling it the CISA Espama-Rama, but we will let you know more about that once we get that date locked in.
It's really fascinating to hear about the history of the SBOM, you know, concept, and knowing that it was close at one point to becoming legislation, and then kind of here we are, you know, what is it, 7 years later, and now it's, you know, becoming to the forefront again with the executive order and things like that. So it's funny to hear about that. You also mentioned cloud native environments and some of the tooling and things like that. I know you and I have talked about, you know, how SBOM would work in complex environments like SaaS, for example, where you have several parties involved, interdependencies. You know, how do you see SBOM evolving in that SaaS environment, for example?
This is a fun question. It's, I think, an important issue. A lot of the value for the end user of SBOM data has been talked about in terms of on-prem software, right? It's on my network. I need to know what's there so that if there is an underlying vulnerability, I have that data and I can take action. Very few people have come to me over the last few years and said, you know, Alan, the future of software is on-prem. We know that the future is going to be, you know, a SaaS model, a cloud model. I just got back from KubeCon, where I got a chance to engage with the cloud native world. And the good news is that we have a lot of great tools. The modern pipeline for software development, especially in the cloud native world, has a lot of great tools. It's built in a CI/CD model. And so actually having the injection points to collect the data, to monitor the data, to analyze the data, it's much easier to do just because it's a much more modern and sophisticated world. So I think from a generation perspective, we're going to see it moving very quickly. And there are some great open source projects out there. There are some great commercial projects out there. A lot of the vendors in the expo hall at KubeCon were sort of talking about SBOM, which is, you know, always great. One of the challenges is how does this manifest downstream from a risk management perspective? Because we want the organizations themselves the developers themselves to track this data. But we also need to understand, you know, what are the expectations for customers? And I think we're going to see some good outcomes, but right, a SaaS product may have an hourly build or even a faster cycle. And of course, they're quite large. So how do we manage that data? And what are the expectations around response time? Who do I talk to when I have a concern? All of those things, which really are business issues rather than technical issues, we'll have to work with. I do want to point out that there is, right, we're able to make progress on this for a number of different ways. There are some online SaaS products today that are publishing their SBOM. Some of you know Sunil Yu, just a great leader in cybersecurity who, you know, he recently joined a company named Jupiter One. And if you go to jupiter1.com/SBOM, he has his live SBOM because why not? He tracks it. He's nothing to be ashamed of. Why don't we publish it? And the other thing is a great researcher in Mexico City who goes by Puerco on Twitter recently built the SBOM for all of Kubernetes. So again, if you say, well, my project's far too large, we have an SBOM for Kubernetes. We can manage large software projects with the tools that we have today.
That's an awesome answer. I actually watched a panel recently with you and Sunil where you guys talked about the three different, you know, primary SBOM formats and the different, you know, use cases, for example, for some of them and things like that. So that was a fascinating watch for those that missed it. Definitely go check that out. One thing you brought up with Sunil and the publication of the SBOM, you know, earlier you mentioned like how some folks are pushing back about not wanting to share the SBOM and in their scenarios where maybe you only share it with the customer. And it got me thinking like from a malicious actor perspective, like they're obviously going to try to engineer that game and you know, pose as a customer to get access to that information and try to take advantage of that. Any thoughts around that? And then also it kind of leads into the whole security through obscurity conversation versus, you know, this is the opposite of that, which is being transparent. So I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Definitely. Front. And this is probably the question that we get the most from security folks, which is, hey, are you exposing some risk? We call this the roadmap to the attacker. Or are you going to help attackers figure out how to attack a piece of software? And you know what? It's 2021. So we don't just talk about attackers, we actually threat model. And if you have an advanced adversary, nation state, or, you know, a serious competitor that wants to, you know, duplicate your product, guess what? Jidra's free. reverse engineering is pretty easy. There are open source composition analysis tools that can do binary extraction. So there's a lot of ways that any attacker who wants to know what's in your product can find out what's in your product without that much effort. So the advanced adversaries will already have access to this data. And at the other end, we've got automated distributed attacks. And again, they won't have time. They're not interested in your targets. They're just interested in anything that they can do. Ransomware advocates, ransomware attackers for looking for the first toehold aren't looking at you. They just, are using automated scans. And for that, really the asymmetry is on the defender, right? The defender may not know what's on their network. They may say, I know that I've got a certain outdated install someplace. But if they don't have the full SBOM of everything that's on their network, then it's very hard for them to be confident to say, okay, this vulnerability that we know a ransomware gang is actively trying to exploit or actively using to pivot is on my network, then they can. So really, we need to give the defender the appropriate roadmap.
Yeah, that's great. I love that answer, sort of that dichotomy there. I'm curious, before I take you to our last question, is there anything, you mentioned the meeting coming up in December, is there anything else that you wanted to share with the audience? Anywhere you wanted to point them to?
So again, we will soon have our new CISO website up, but at the moment, most of the resources you want are around ntia.gov/SBOM. And the other thing is, again, it is a very vibrant community. There are a lot of folks talking about it. There are people who are still skeptical about this idea, and that's great, right? We want people to engage in it. The other thing is, I think this is a very ripe area for innovation. If anyone out there is trying to figure out what their next business is going to be, there's going to be a lot of SBOM data floating around, in part because the recent executive order 14028 has said everything the U.S. government buys that we deem critical software is going to have an SBOM. So there's going to be a lot of data coming out. Folks have been focusing on SBOM generation. We're not as far along on SBOM consumption. And so as you think about what kind of tools you want to play with, whether you're someone who just wants to tinker in open source or you're trying to get your next startup lined up, this is going to be a huge opportunity. So think about that. And the other thing is just, for those of you who are on Twitter, hashtag SBOM is a fun set of conversations we can have. So we'd love to hear your ideas and have you join this active community. The U.S. government is committed to making sure this is a community-led effort as we sort of continue to evolve this.
Awesome. Thank you. Great resources. And then so that'll take us to our last question with you. What does cyber resiliency mean to you?
I love this term. And I'm going to perhaps scandalize my external affairs team, because resiliency is, I use the analogy that it's a little bit like the famous Supreme Court definition of pornography, which is to say it's very hard to define, but we know it when we see it. And to be more precise, we know its absence when we see it. So it really is saying, am I prepared to respond? And some of that's the fluffy organizational part that we all know we need to do, but it's very hard to sort of measure. And so a lot of that is why I look for discrete things that we can measure that actually tell us a resilient property. And again, that's one of the reasons that I'm passionate about SBOM, is because it allows us to say, can I respond once I know that there is a new risk?
I love that answer. Thank you very much. I wanted to say a huge thank you to Alan Friedman for being here with us today. It was an absolute pleasure. We covered everything SBOM. So thank you very much. And that's going to take us out for this week. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next week.